It's all about the sound. Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Carolina. Don't you wanna get down and dirty? It's Texas, I'm thirsty.
This is the SEC Spin.
SEC Spin.
With Jay Ruark and Brian Daniel.
Welcome back to SEC Spin Radio with Jay and BD, episode 11. And we are here live. I would say live. It's not really live. Bonus Room Productions in White House, Tennessee, in the heartland, Middle Tennessee. Jay, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right, I guess. It was a really bad Saturday for me at the Kentucky Vandy game, but it was a really good Tuesday for me.
Was the weather good on Saturday? I can't remember.
Honestly,
oh, it was a beautiful day.
It was
That's
a beautiful
right.
day. We had a beautiful. We got there about 10:45. Posted up. We had the truck loaded down with the cornhole boards and the coolers, and we had music going. We had a great spot. There's a Kentucky. Group of Kentucky grads that own a house there right across from the practice field, and $15 to park. They had a pork butt going that you were welcome to eat on, and man, we had a great time tailgating. Not such a good time in the game.
We did. Down.
We got in 10 rows off the field at the 20-yard line for $20 a piece. I was pretty excited about that.
Nice.
But it was a long
Kentucky
walk.
Vanderbilt.
Long walk back to the truck, and then the traffic was so bad we just had to sit there and wait to get out. So I did have a great time tailgating. The weather was beautiful. The game was terrible.
I appreciate the text, by the way.
Why did you guys come down? We got plenty of food.
You come on down, which it only took me about 25 minutes to get down there. But at that time, I've got to tell you, I was on like bag number 37 of a good leaf day.
I
had momentum. We were bagging at about 18 bags an hour. It's a good pace for
us. Can't stop at 37. So, you got to at least get to 50. You got to at least get to 50.
The BPH. So I just couldn't let that go. You get a day like that when the leaves aren't wet. Man, I'd have loved to have been with you, but, you know, duty calls.
I understand.
Yeah, that was a rough game. Interesting weekend. But before we get to that, we want to look at some coaching stuff going on. I've seen a lot of headlines with Les Miles. And interesting enough, LSU travels to Ole Miss where Coach Hugh Freeze is, which this is the second year in a row that they have not been able to build on a big signature, more than a signature win early in the season. And Ole Miss is one of the teams that I have kind of bandwagoned this year. I like them a lot, but they haven't been able to pull through. But Arkansas is just on the move. We'll talk about that later too. Big game, basketball game last week involving an SEC team. And beyond that, I'm really kind of pumped, maybe overstating a little bit, about SEC basketball. You've got Avery Johnson. You've got Rick Barnes,
yep.
Ben Howland,
who's
and our own John Calipari. Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of new coaches and exciting things happening. Because last year, I remember when we couldn't even do a show on SEC basketball. It was just
bad.
Kentucky, and that's about
bad.
It.
Yeah.
So, all right, and we don't talk about the NFL a whole lot, but also wanted to is that interesting at all to you this year? Do you follow NFL much?
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. I follow Peyton Manning and the Broncos.
So there's that story. So Peyton pulled, but it came out later that he does have an injury.
No.
So producer Jeff is saying that that's probably not the reality of it. So we may have a debate here.
Yeah. Well, last year after the Rams game, I was determined that Peyton was hurt because if you go back to the first six games, he was number one, leading the league in everything. Front runner for the
just
MVP.
Like Peyton does.
Yeah, the first six games. That seventh game against the Rams, took some hard hits. I was actually at that game. Came out the next week and just looked not the same. And then from there on out, just not the same the rest of the season. And I was determined that he was hurt. Come to find out, pretty shaken up with a bad shoulder and ribs, apparently, is how the story goes. I definitely think something had to happen. He looked completely different going from week six to week eight or whatever it was after that Rams game. Few weeks ago, that Sunday night game against Green Bay, he looked like the Peyton of old. I mean, he threw for over 300 yards. They dominated the Packers, who at the time were the team picked from the NFC to go to the Super Bowl, have since picked up another loss. But, I mean, they just got dominated by Peyton Manning and the Broncos, and they had no answer. Then the following week, Peyton just does not look good, doesn't do well. They lose. But then, man, Sunday was his worst recorded game of all time. Gets pulled. They say he has a partial tear, the plantar fascia. Never had that, but I've heard it's a really, really painful injury. I don't know. I read these articles that say Peyton needs to retire now, that Peyton is done. But, I mean, I heard those things the first game of the season, and then he comes back and has a couple late quarter comebacks. I have to believe that he's got one last little run of games left in him. Maybe not win a Super Bowl, but at least get to the playoffs and be competitive with somebody. I mean, I feel like he's got to have a little bit of that left in him. He's tied for the all-time wins. Got to feel that he's going to break that. I think he's got a little bit left, but I think after the last little couple game stretch run, I think he's done. I just don't see him responding. I mean, he's so. I mean, he doesn't. The defenses are jumping on him so bad now. And like I used to, you would never blitz Peyton Manning. He would call you out on your blitz, and he would get rid of the ball before you knew what happened, and it'd be a 10, 12-yard gain every time. They're just teeing off on him. They know he can't put anything into the ball. And I do think that is because early in the season, he was overthrowing. Everybody was saying his arm's done. If anything, he was overthrowing his players. I thought it was more of a timing thing. That timing, they fixed the timing in the Green Bay game. I don't even think he's injured. How significant the injury is, I don't know. Because he did look different throwing the ball Sunday than he did two Sundays ago against the Packers.
Well, Cincinnati goes down, and we've got two undefeated teams now. One of them is the Carolina Panthers. How serious of a contender do you think they are in the NFC?
I think they're very serious. I mean, they've got a great defense. Cam Newton is playing pretty lights out. I mean, he's throwing the ball very well. He's throwing. He's not throwing a lot of picks like he was previously, and they can't stop him running. I mean, he's bigger than the linebackers. So I mean, I think the Panthers are for real, and they proved it by just dominating the Packers. I mean, they came out and just dominated. That was supposed to be their competition. They dominated them, and the Seahawks are down. They beat the Seahawks already. Who else is left in the NFC right now that could even play with them? I don't see anybody.
The NFC North is kind of interesting, and so is the AFC North. You're seeing turnabouts there. So Pittsburgh in the AFC North is down, and Green Bay in the NFC North is down. What's amazing to me, I mean, in those two divisions, you've got the Vikings, who I think are sitting on one loss, and the Bengals, another one-loss team, and both those guys look pretty good, too. Yeah. I think we're going to see a surprise, actually, in both the conferences. And Carolina, I guess, to be honest, would be a surprise, even though they're undefeated now. So, like the NFL, it tends to run. We're seeing a little bit of a change of the guard, and it's interesting.
And I'm a fan of the Vikings. I mean, their only loss was to the Broncos, and that was a tight game. That was when Denver was playing well. But Adrian Peterson is Adrian Peterson, and Bridgewater is better than a game manager. He doesn't turn the ball over. He doesn't come out and throw five touchdowns a game, but he can make plays, and he can make plays with his feet. I like the Vikings too.
So to the Manning situation, it is a long season. It's hard to believe that we're only a couple of games, one or two, past midseason at this point in the National Football League. If you're not, I mean, what's Manning, 37, 38 years old, 39 years old, 18th season? There's no way I think he ought to retire now. Peyton Manning can't retire mid-season in his last season. You can't do that. I think that's just ridiculous for anyone to say. But it's also borderline ridiculous to think that he could make it through this season being the Manning that we have come to appreciate and expect over the course of his career.
Yeah.
At this point in his life. And I can speak with someone that's maybe a little bit older than that. But those little injuries, I cannot imagine having been at that age and having little nagging injuries and having to go out and play in the National Football League day in, day out. And not just the games, but the practices. Yeah. It's brutal.
Yeah.
So to see him going, another six or seven games, is hard to – I mean, he'll do it. I mean, they'll roll him out there, and he may even have some good games in him left, but it's just hard to imagine if you're not on top of your game getting that done.
Well, the one thing that I really would like for him, what I would really like to see for him do is, I want him. I want Peyton to be able to play against the Patriots, maybe for the last time next Sunday, and that's the Sunday after Thanksgiving. It's the night game. It's in Denver. I think Peyton might look at that game right now as his Super Bowl. I mean, I think he realizes, you know what? I don't think I'm getting back there. And maybe for him, that's his Super Bowl. And to be able to play in that game and play well and to beat the undefeated Patriots. You know, I mean, I think people would look back at that and say, man, he got his record win against it. That's, I really want to see that. If I could see that and that was his last good game, I'll be fine. I'll be fine with it. That's what I really want to see. I really hope that he gets healthy.
Are you being honest? Are you being honest with this right now?
I'm trying to be as honest as I can. Either way,
you're putting on a brave face.
Either way, if his last game is not a Super Bowl win, I'm gonna be upset at some point. But that would at least be, that would be a second best, I guess, if you will.
If the trade off was that he would host Saturday Night Live more than what he does now, I'll take it. I think he's one of the best SNL hosts ever.
I think Peyton Manning would be one of the most fun people to just hang out with.
I would watch the Peyton Manning show if it was a 30-minute sitcom.
Yeah,
so I know that probably that there's a good chance that is not going to happen. He's probably going to be in the he's going to own part of an NFL team probably, or be in the in management. I would think, but
could be in the next Expendables.
He could be. You're listening to SEC Spin with JMBD. We are talking Southeastern Conference football. Before we get to Week 11 and the crazy stuff that's going on, we're winding down the Southeastern Conference football season, and it seems like it's kind of flown by. But Kentucky played Duke Tuesday night, and I was really surprised to see that the line was 4.5 and Kentucky was actually favored to beat Duke. I knew that Duke wasn't as good this year as last year coming into the season, or at least the expectation was, but I also knew that they had a really good recruiting class, and Krzyzewski has shown, well, at least last year, that he's starting to move into this, you know, recruiting in that top 15 and being okay with them going.
Yeah.
So we played in Chicago, and I did not expect Kentucky to win the game, particularly after watching the Albany game. I thought their defense was too bad to beat Duke. Looked better against NJIT, which is the craziest acronym for a college, NJIT. They looked better, but the defense was still bad. They played undisciplined. I didn't think on a neutral court that they would beat Duke, and they beat them by 13, and it should have been worse, and they were up by 17, I think, at one time. Does it say more about UK, or does it say more about Duke to you?
I think it says more about UK, honestly, and usually I'm the very pessimistic UK fan or the hypercritical. I was very impressed with Kentucky against this Duke team, because this is who Duke is. This is now Duke is going to be better come March, just like Kentucky is going to be better come March. Last year when they played Kansas, that was almost kind of a fluke game. Kansas didn't have one of their best players, and that was just an annihilation from the get. And Kansas just looked like they were a deer in the headlights.
Oh, that's right.
So that was a 30-point debacle. This
More
year,
than that, wasn't it?
Well, no, it, I think the end. Point is they Duke, this is who Duke's going to be, and these are the players that Duke's going to have. Their leader is going to be this Grayson Allen kid who, had what he's averaging 27 points going into this game.
Wojo too.
Yeah. Oh my God. But the point that I kept trying to make last year about Kentucky is that regardless how you felt about the Harrisons, whether you liked them or you didn't like them or whatever, but the point was is that Tyler Ulis was the engine that made that team go. The team was, in my opinion, better, more efficient, more fluid when he was in the game. Now, you can look at numbers and stats, and maybe they didn't always read in Ulis's favor, but Ulis didn't turn the ball over. Ulis was an effective scorer. He was a consistent shooter, and he can pass the ball and run the floor better than anybody. You put that with Jamal Murray and Isaiah Briscoe this year, Jamal Murray might be the most talented kid on the floor every night. I don't know. Maybe there might not be another kid that can play the way that he can, but Ulis just dominated that game. I mean, and to be 5'9", dominate the game, I mean, he's just better than your guard. I don't care what you say about his size or his whatever. I mean, the point is Grayson Allen went 0 for 9 in the first half, and Ulis was kneeing him up the whole time. Grayson Allen, Ulis gives up about 5-6 inches to Grayson Allen, and he D'd him up the whole time. And he would ride him into the lane and then force him into a bigger defender. And the way that he's able to do that, 18 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, 0 turnovers. Zero turnovers. Tyler Ulis is he may not be the most talented, flashy Jamal Murray type player in the country, but in my opinion, he is the most important player in the country. And he is the best basketball player in the country. I'm talking basketball player, not talent, basketball player. And I think that if Ulis stays healthy and they keep going three-guard lineup, I honestly like this team 10 times better than I like last year's team.
They are a little more – well, this team is a team of playmakers. Last year's team was length, depth, and defense. They didn't
– they were awkward, weren't they? I mean, there was just an awkward flow.
And I've told you, you know, and I think you're one of the guys that laughs at me, and rightfully so. They were, you know, 38-0 going into the last game. But I think they actually overachieved. I don't think they were as talented as people thought they were. They had size and depth. They were really good. I'm not saying that they weren't good, but when you think about who are they going to go to when they needed points, we know now, you know, Aaron and Andrew, they were what they were. I thought they were good college guards. You thought they were not quite that good, but they weren't go-to types. You know, they worked within an offense okay. They had size in their favor. Towns was good. Towns, you know, he was good offensively. He's probably our best offensive player. But this year's team is different than that. They have a handful of guys that can do that. You're talking about Ulis. What's interesting about Ulis is you said he dominated the game, and he did. Not every game is he going to dominate the stat sheet. His presence is dominant. He doesn't have to do 18-6. He's not going to turn it over, but he doesn't have to do 18-6 every night to dominate a game. And that's what's so cool about him. He's one of those guys that when he's on the court and he's got the ball, you just feel better.
Yeah. I mean, he makes you feel comfortable. Even if he gets in traffic, they're pressing. I mean, he's just so calm, nonchalant. And he just commands the floor. I mean, he'll go take the ball from Murray. He gets them set. Still not sure what kind of offense we're running, but he gets them set, and he gets them doing whatever it is they're trying to accomplish. And, you know, not that this really means anything.
But you can see, and maybe it's a difference between, maybe it's a difference between Andrew Harrison and Tyler Ulis, but you actually can see an offense. You could Tuesday night.
Yeah, I mean, there was some consistent movement. Also, too, I think, everybody has said that Tyler Ulis is not somebody to be messed with and that he stands up, he yells at players, he gets on them. I mean, I don't see Andrew Harrison doing that, but you can see that the players, when he's yelling and talking, they are listening to what he says. I mean, you know, it's like last year, who was the guy from Louisville that he almost got into a fight with, and the guy was a foot taller than he was. I mean, he just is not – he's not scared to be that little bulldog, and I love that. I mean, that's the kind of player that I appreciate and I like. I mean, I just think that is the difference come March when it gets down and dirty against a great Wisconsin team or a tough North Carolina team or a great Duke team who's going to be there come March. Tyler Ulis is going to be the difference maker.
All right, before we get off this, I just want to touch on just a minute because it's interesting in the recruiting side of things. Calipari closes this last week of the fall signing period with 3 top 10s. Darren Fox, the best point guard in the nation. Malik Monk, consensus top 5-6 player, and I think he's the number one two guard. And then Bam Adebayo, who's, you know, I've seen him anywhere from like 6 to 12, but 5-star player.
Yeah.
So Krzyzewski was, and Duke had the number one recruiting class until Cal got those guys. But here's the deal, Jay, and this is one of the things. I mean, I've said it before, I'm a Kentucky alum, so it's not like I'm not, I don't have a bias here. But how is it that Krzyzewski can do the same exact thing that Cal does and go after these one and dones and get them and win with them. But with Krzyzewski, he has adapted to the game, whereas Cal is undermining the game. How is it that those reporters and the people that make the news can get away with that? Because it looks to me from the outside, it's the same thing.
Well, the difference is, I mean, the difference, number one.
Five national championships.
Five to one on national championships. But the other thing is, too, is you got to go back and look at the complete body of work. Whether you agree or you disagree, you think Coach K should have gotten in trouble with the Corey Maggette thing, which I still am baffled at that whole deal. All of that aside, whatever your opinion is, here are the stats. Coach K has never really been fully questioned. He's been coaching longer. He's got more wins. He's got more national championships, and he's done it in different ways. Cal has kind of always done it the same way. I'm just going to go after the best players, and I'm going to get them. Cal's never been, quote, caught, proven doing anything wrong, but Final Fours were vacated where he was coaching. Now, I'm not blaming that all on Cal, but that's an antagonizing trait as opposed to Coach K, who is perceived as this mastermind coach, mastermind, great salesman without being the salesman. Calipari is just known as the used car salesman, right? Coach K is like, you know, you're going to come, I'm going to take care of your son, I'm going to teach your son how to be a man. Coach Cal is like, come to Kentucky, I'll get you the NBA. I mean, I'll get you paid. I mean, that's the perception of what it is with the media. So the media will cater to Coach K and soften what he's doing. And the thing about it is when Coach K is talking to the media, he's very precise and right with his words. Coach Cal calls out the NCAA every time he gets interviewed. So, I mean, there is a complete – that's the difference. It's not what they're doing. It's the way that Coach Cal acts in his past and the way Coach K acts in his past. I mean, that's the difference. So, I mean
– sometimes when I'm seeing Cal interviewed, I just want to say, hey, just stop. Stop talking.
Yeah.
Stop
please,
talking,
please
Cal.
Please, hush. Hush.
But Krzyzewski's become, to me, the Tom Hanks of college basketball. It's like he feels this tremendous pressure and is compelled to try and say something profound.
Yeah.
So I made that comment about Euless, you know, having a big heart. And I heard that and I was like, were you watching the same game as me? We all know how heart translates. Scrappy.
Hustle.
Interchangeable word. Hustle. Word. Euless is a heck of a basketball player.
Euless is better than your guards. He's just
it doesn't have anything to do with the size of their heart. In fact, I'm not even sure that I agree with that. I don't see anything from him that would make him be the heart guy more than any other player. You wouldn't say that Jamal Murray, man, that guy's got, he's got a big heart.
Yeah.
Euless is the same kind of player as Murray to me. He's a good basketball player.
And I'm not saying that Euless couldn't out-hustle your best player.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that at all.
But I'm saying that he doesn't have to rely on that to be good.
But why can't Krzyzewski just say that?
But
so, I think Cal and Kay are both playing a role.
Yeah.
And they found their thing. So, Kay's playing that. And I've learned how to spell his name. Did you notice I don't say Coach K in our text anymore? I actually spell it. I made myself learn how to spell his name.
I almost spell checked you the other day.
Yeah, it's important to me to do that. But I think what he's trying to be the sage, and Cal is, he's the brawler. And they're playing those roles. And I think part of me wants to say Cal is really just being honest. And he's saying, hey, I know what you want. I'll get it to you.
Well, Coach K won the Oscar last year in college basketball. It'll be interesting to see who wins the Oscar this year. I think Calipari's the front runner now because he has the win. It'll be interesting to see.
It's going to be interesting.
Can't
wait for the red carpet.
E! News will be all over it.
You're listening to SEC Spin Radio with Jay and BD. All right, interesting weekend last weekend. I want to ease into the games last week by first taking a look at our coaching carousel here. Well, actually, it's not a coaching carousel except in South Carolina. So we've talked about Mark Richt almost ad nauseum on the spin. He gets a big win against Auburn. Big win. That's a big rivalry game. We said, and I think where we landed was, if he wins out and wins bowl, then that will temper the talk about his job. I don't know if it goes away, but it at least takes the fever down. And yeah. Auburn was a big step there. But now you've got LSU going down to Arkansas. And LSU, that was at Baton Rouge in 31-14. And then you've got Ole Miss, Hugh Freeze losing, so like we said at the top of the show, and I've heard you say before, this is 2 years in a row that they've beaten Alabama and couldn't I mean, not even coming close to building on
that. Can't capitalize.
So they take another W 2 weeks ago at Arkansas, and so you've got Les Miles, and I'm seeing headlines with that Les's job is in jeopardy. And so you've got LSU going to Ole Miss, so it's Miles and Freeze. So you got Miles, Freeze, Rick, and maybe Stoops. Probably that job's not in jeopardy, but that's a big loss against Vanderbilt, and we know South Carolina's open.
Well,
and one more, yeah. And Pinkel has now, and so and we know Missouri's going to be open because he's retiring.
Which I'll comment on the whole Missouri situation in a minute. My first kind of big take on this whole thing is all this hype about Les Miles being on the hot seat at LSU, and this is a must win for them playing Ole Miss and all that. I mean, I beg to differ. I mean, Hugh Freeze, back to back, and I get the Les Miles. I mean, he never really has a quarterback. Why doesn't he have a quarterback? You know, since that 2011 national championship game, LSU just hasn't been the same LSU until this year. But think about this, guys. Fournette is a sophomore. They're starting Brandon Harris, who's a sophomore. All these guys are coming back for them. A lot of their defense is going to be coming back. A lot of their offense is coming back. LSU's a scary, scary team next year. I mean, if anything, right now they're automatically the number two team returning, in my opinion, next year. I know I'm getting a little ahead of us. But to say that Les Miles is on the hot seat for losing to Alabama again, I know that they got worked and you would expect more, but Alabama is on a tear right now. And they should be undefeated, but they are on an absolute tear right now. You can't blame anybody for losing to Alabama that way. I mean, look at Mississippi State this past weekend. The Arkansas loss, that's a bad loss. But again, this is
the way it happened.
This is back-to-back years that Arkansas has done the complete opposite of Ole Miss, started off terribly, terribly, and then been the team at the end of the season. You definitely don't want to play them. You don't want to play them because they're going and winning games that they shouldn't win. They dominated that game in Baton Rouge, and that was a very bad loss, and I completely agree. My argument is against Ole Miss, you hadn't beaten Alabama in something like 20 years or whatever it was last year when they went at home and they beat them. Alabama was number one team in the country. They didn't capitalize on that game at all. Then they went down to Baton Rouge and they got beat, and Bo Wallace walks off the field before the game's over. And then they kind of just, it almost like felt like Hugh Freeze kind of lost the team. They got worked by Arkansas, Mississippi State, and then they were an embarrassment in their bowl game, an absolute embarrassment in their bowl game. Ole Miss again this year pulls off the fluke game against Bama, rolling. Gets pretty embarrassed by Memphis, gets really embarrassed by Florida, then loses to Arkansas too. I mean, this is back-to-back years that you have blown games to Arkansas that you definitely should have won, and it was ugly. My thing with Hugh Freeze is he has a very similar team to Ole Miss or to LSU, but he also has a quarterback. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't have Leonard Fournette, but he doesn't need it. And when you have a quarterback that can throw it 400 yards a game and throw it all over the place, you just need an adequate
– And a guy like Treadwell.
And a guy like Treadwell, you just need an adequate running back. I mean, that kind of cancels out Fournette, which they were able to move the ball and score a lot of points against Alabama, whereas LSU was so one-dimensional with Fournette. I just think that Hugh Freeze – I think it's too early to fire him, but if you're going to talk about somebody on the hot seat, I mean, this is back-to-back years. You've been up in the top five and have completely digressed out of the rankings. Very similar to Kentucky, and we're talking about Mark Stoops being, I mean, back-to-back years, the Kentucky Wildcats have come out hot, digressed, and played themselves out of bowl contention. Ole Miss is obviously a different team than Kentucky, but it's very similar the way that they've digressed.
Yeah, and I think if you're an Ole Miss fan, one of the things that really bothers you is the fact that that you controlled your own destiny during the Arkansas game. You controlled your own destiny. So you beat Alabama, and even with one loss, if you went out, you've got the win over Alabama.
Even with the two losses, with the loss of Florida and Memphis, they still controlled their own destiny.
That's right, and so that's – That would be tough. But, you know, also, Freeze has got them to where people are talking about him, and he's recruiting well. And if you're Ole Miss, I don't think he's on notice. And I would agree with you on Miles as well. I don't think you do that. Now, there's still some games left to be played. I guess all these guys maybe could coach themselves out of a job. I don't know if it's this year or not, but they could certainly go into next year with some hefty expectations and some or else kind of mandates.
I agree. I think next year, I think Hugh Freeze and Les Miles both have to do something, not win a national title, but they both need to not have bad losses to keep themselves off that hot seat.
Now, we both picked Vanderbilt over Kentucky last week because of Vanderbilt's defense. I really did not think this game would be 21-17. I thought it'd be 10-6, you know, 14-10 or something like that. So Kentucky gives up the 21. I think one of those was a pick six. So the defense did not give up all three of those touchdowns.
Well, the thing is where my issue is with Mark Stoops. Number one, the pick six, the trick play right before halftime, that literally happened right in front of me, and it was not anything special. The guy stood on the sideline. Kentucky never covered him up, and he just literally walked down the field and threw up his hand, and they threw it down the sideline. Now, he acted like he was going off the field, but he stopped right there. Kentucky never picked him up. It's a completely legal play. Those two plays right there, that's 14 points. Also, too, it should be noted, Kentucky had the ball at the one at one point and inside the five and another possession, got 0 points to show on those possessions. So twice inside the five-yard line, 0 points to show. Lose 21-17, once on a pick six, once on a trick play. Again, this is where Mark Stoops kills me because he's supposed to have this, Vanderbilt has been, since three or four games ago, the worst team offensively next to Kentucky, and we're giving up trick plays. Vanderbilt was able to move the ball against Kentucky, too. I mean, maybe they weren't scoring a lot of points, but they were just moving the ball and keeping the ball out of Kentucky's hands. And again, Kentucky giving up a lot of third downs. To pull towels, put in Barker, then pull Barker back out. And then to come out and name Barker the starter for this week. I mean, I don't get what's going on. I just can't figure him out. At least I could figure Joker out. I knew that there was not anything going on with Joker, and he was just going to be as conservative as possible. I can't figure Stoops out. I really can't. I mean, and again, back-to-back years, we're going to play ourselves out of bowl. We're going to win Saturday against Charlotte, but we'll end up losing to Louisville just because the way that I just can't figure out what he's doing.
So this is 2 years in a row, and last year I don't think Kentucky started off 4-1. This year they were 4-1. We had the heart.
Last year they started 5-1. This year they started 4-2.
But they had two SEC wins.
Yes.
At that point.
Yep.
This year and last year they did not.
So and they should have beat Florida.
Should have. Yeah. Well, we've said that before.
Could have. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So we had the heart music, and we were actually thinking about they could contend the SEC East because Georgia's Georgia. You know, this was before we knew that Florida was, better. They're a good team. I don't know that they're as good. I think the SEC East kind of opened up for them. I mean, they went out and they won games, but, I mean, Georgia's kind of stumbling to the finish line. South Carolina's fired their coach. Kentucky's just about imploded. Vanderbilt has probably been the surprise of the SEC East after Florida. They've got two conference wins. I did not think they would have a shot at one.
No, and Vanderbilt, I've got to see what their record. What's their record now?
I don't know, but I still don't think that they're in bowl contention. I don't think they've got enough on the non-conference side. They had a bad loss against. Did they lose to Western?
They lost to Western.
I think that was the game that they needed to win.
Yeah.
So Vanderbilt has actually got a little momentum, and they've got an identity. They play good defense. They play great defense. You look at a team like Kentucky, they don't have that identity.
And I want to go back to the days, and I've been saying this, I don't expect Kentucky to ever be that great defense. I expect Kentucky to be
air raid
offense. and that is at least it's fun to watch, and they can play in any game. If they've got the offense, you can play with anybody, especially in the SEC. But I don't know. It's just so frustrating to watch the last 2 years. The fact that they've got talent on the offensive side of the ball, just frustrating. Tolles is about as frustrating as it gets.
Was it Patty Ice?
Patty Ice. Patty, and everything I've read says that the guys in the locker room are not a really big fan of him because he's fairly cocky, and it's like, man, you don't really have a whole lot of things to be cocky about, man. You got benched.
So that's Kentucky Vanderbilt. I think that was an interesting game. I mean, I am not, and I've told you, you guys get mad at me, I am not a huge Kentucky football guy. They just, it's like Charlie Brown kicking the football. I'm out. I'm not running at the football and letting Lucy take it from me anymore. But that's still an interesting game because, you know, we've joked about it, but that game is circled on both schedules by their fans as a game that they can win. And Vanderbilt winning that, and I don't think the home in a way makes any difference at all. That stadium, you were there, I bet there was just as much blue as gold.
Yeah. And the thing about it is we were sitting on the – we actually were sitting on the Vanderbilt side, and I mean, there were Kentucky fans – I mean, you could see where the big patch was on the opposite side of the stadium, but there were Kentucky fans sprinkled in all around us. I mean, there was just as, you're right, just as much blue. And our whole tailgate was nothing but, and it was huge, and it was nothing but Kentucky.
So that's just not a factor.
No.
So then you had Arkansas beating LSU, which we've already touched on. Arkansas, we knew coming into the season, Arkansas had talent. Terrible start. LSU started off like gangbusters. Big win for Arkansas, and I'm really happy for those guys. You know, when our storylines 2 weeks ago, we talked about, can Arkansas get it in Auburn? Can they win and get, you know, get the six to get in the bowl? Looks like Arkansas is well on the way. The other game that I want to hit on just real quick before we moved on to tweets of the week and week 12 is the Alabama-Mississippi State game. And I brought it up last week. Mississippi State was playing. They actually controlled their own destiny, and they're at home, and they have one of the best players in the nation. I thought this could be a trap game from, and this is Alabama coming off the big win over LSU. Yeah. This was the classic trap situation, and Mississippi State could be playing. They were actually playing for the SEC West here. They would have had to win out. But if they beat Alabama here, then they can control their own destiny. And they've got a lot of tough games behind them.
Right.
Really only Ole Miss in front of them. And Alabama just beat the heck out of him. And Derrick Henry runs for 200 yards again. And he may just have flipped the Heisman race with Fournette.
I think that LSU-Alabama game. I think that Derrick Henry is now your front runner for Heisman. I think Delvin Cook from Florida State is a close second. But I'm telling you what, Alabama looks – last year they looked good. This time we thought, you know, Alabama is going to be our team from the SEC to make the Final Four. I'm not sure Alabama is not the best team in the country right now.
You're not the only one saying that.
They are for them to rebound their focus, and for Lane Kiffin to continue to stick to the run and just dominate them 31-6. I mean, it could have been 50-6. I mean, that was just a domination. And hats off to Alabama and Nick Saban, especially all the talk this year that the Saban dynasty was over and he was done. And here we are, and we're sitting right in the driver's seat. All they got to do is finish the season out, and who knows? They could end up the number one team going to the college playoff.
One of my best friends, his son is a starting quarterback for Charleston Southern, who goes into Tuscaloosa this week.
Oh, boy.
I coached with him when I was coaching in North Georgia. He was our defensive coordinator. And so his Steven is his name. He called his dad. He said, so you think we got a chance? And Mark said, son, I've never lied to you. He said, I'm just telling you, I'm just glad you're on offense and you don't have to try and tackle Derrick Henry.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So Alabama's got Charleston Southern this weekend, and then I assume that they've got the Iron Bowl the next weekend.
Yep, yep.
And then the SEC Championship the weekend after that.
Right.
Against Florida. So you have to assume that Alabama should beat Florida. So yes. Alabama should beat Auburn and Florida. So there you go. That's week 11. All right, you want to move on to tweets of the week?
Let's do it.
I actually have some this week.
Nice.
And now it's time for the SEC Spin Radio tweets of the week.
All right, Jay, number one, my first one, and this is from Daryl Bird. Stoops admits it's a low point in his UK tenure. This late in year three, it should be his high point.
agree with that. I mean, what is the bare minimum you give a coach? 3 years? That gives him enough time to start turning things around. And at least by the end of year three, you want to see some improvement. We're really not going to be that much. But his first season, he had 2 wins. We're going to end this season with 5. Is that right? 5 or 4? Are we going to end with 4?
Who knows?
I think we have to win out. Yeah, we'll end with 4. Four wins. So we're going to 2 wins to 5 wins to 4 wins by the end of this season. No, well, I guess we'll win Saturday. We should. So we'll 2 wins, 5 wins, 5 wins. Not being in a bowl by the end of your third year. That's not acceptable.
I've said it before here on SEC Spin Radio. Kentucky football is a different trajectory. I just don't think you can look at it that way.
Gosh, you make me so mad sometimes.
Just keeping it real.
So this is actually from our boy Cameron Mills. The guy, yes, that Cameron Mills. this was, I don't know if you guys have seen
Big
this.
Big Shot Cam. I actually worked with him at it when I was in New Mexico one weekend.
Well, he cool apparently, dude. He was one of
them. Strong believer.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Good guy. He tweeted at Throwboy Tees, which if you're not familiar with what that is, Jared Lorenzen has started this t-shirt line. And it says, "I didn't get to see the game. What did Billis mean with this quote?" And Jared Lorenzen had already had a shirt made. And this was Jay Billis' quote during the game about Tyler Ulis. "If you are good enough to play, you are big enough to play." And the knock on Ulis is how small he is. And somebody said that. One of the other commentators said, "Well, you know, Ulis' size." And Billis fired back with that. "If you are good enough to play, you are big enough to play." Defending Ulis, saying, "Hey, it doesn't matter his size. He's one of the best players on the court." So I like that a lot.
I do think there's going to be a time when his size is going to be an issue. But I don't know what that means. I mean, it's not like I told someone, they said, "What about his size?" I said, "Man, he's been playing against people bigger than him his whole life." So it's not like he hadn't learned a few tricks. My next one is from at Big Head Sports. This is a big MMA fight last weekend. I don't guess you watched it, right?
We ended up deciding not to order it because we were so mad about the Kentucky game, but we watched the highlights on the phone.
I actually ordered it. The people that I usually go in with were out of town, and I just thought, I'm going to go ahead and spend the money. I can't believe I did it. This is Big Ed Sports. Ronda's only clinch of the night was hugging the winner. Yeah. And for those of you that don't know, you know, she's a martial artist. She's looking for that Muay Thai clinch, and Holly Holm fought maybe the smartest fight I've ever seen. And I'm not a big boxing fan. I do enjoy watching MMA, but I'm not an aficionado. Man, she was smart, and Rousey just played right to it.
That kick, that was a devastating kick. This is from Braden Gal at Braden Gal. Iowa, Michigan, Ohio State, and Michigan State are a combined 5-2 against top 40 Sadrin opponents. And Sadrin is one of the things that go into the BCS and all that. It's one of the polls. Bama.
Say it again. Iowa, all the Big Ten. The Big Ten.
Iowa, Michigan, Ohio State, and Michigan State are a combined 5-2 against the top 40 Sadrin opponents. Bama is 7-1 against the top 40. Oklahoma is 4-0 against that top 40.
You had Oklahoma early on in the season, yep. And I thought they played themselves out of it, but they're playing themselves right back into it.
They're right back in. They control their own destiny, in my opinion.
Hey, and tip of the hat to whoever, NCAA or whoever's running this show, this playoff system is awesome.
They're doing a great job with the rankings. And just to update you on the rankings, Clemson number 1, Alabama 2, Ohio State 3, and Notre Dame still hanging on to that 4th spot. But Oklahoma's 5. For those of you counting at home,
you wonder if the Big Ten won't play themselves out of it because Michigan State, do they have to play Ohio State?
That's Saturday night. Michigan State, okay. Ohio State, Saturday night.
So Michigan State beats those guys, and then Michigan State, which could happen. They could lose.
Yeah, they could lose.
And Michigan State's already got a loss. Ohio State could lose to Michigan, too.
Yeah.
And my guess is Iowa's going to drop one somewhere. I haven't watched them yet, but I can't see them running the gauntlet. No. So they may play themselves out of it.
The Big Ten could right now play themselves, which, I mean, I guess could be said for all conferences. But the Big Ten, Pac-12 has pretty much played themselves out from what I think. The Big Ten is kind of next on the cuff because the Big 12 is the one. Oklahoma State's undefeated, and Oklahoma's the team that's right there. So, I mean, those two have to play each other. It's going to be interesting.
I love the conversation. It's really just magnified everything. It used to be, well, even before the BCS, it's a lot more like that. There's right. more teams in play. Before the BCS, it was in the BCS, era. It was just one and two, and nothing else mattered. This right. makes everything matter.
Exactly.
I was always worried that it may jeopardize the regular season, but the way they've done it, it's been really good. My next one is from Matt Jones at Kentucky Sports Radio. And Kansas played Michigan State after the Kentucky-Duke game. I didn't watch it, but this tweet came in from Matt Jones. Perry Ellis has improved a lot since those battles back in the day versus Winston Bennett. Winston Bennett, for those of you that don't know, played in that 1980s for Kentucky, and it seems like Perry Ellis has been around that long.
I thought this was cool, especially for SEC basketball fans. The only other player in the country that might be better than Jamal Murray is Ben Simmons down at LSU, which BD was saying earlier how the SEC basketball is going to be a lot better this year. Ben Simmons at LSU is a reason why. One of the reasons why. Ben Simmons, this is from ESPN Stats and Info, Ben Simmons is the third number one recruit to have a double-double in his debut since 2007. The other two, Kevin Love, 2007, and Anthony Davis, 2011. But that was a good stat.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of headlines to the effect that Ben Simmons did not disappoint. I didn't watch it, but good for LSU. Any words on Blakeney down there? We were recruiting him. I hadn't heard anything about him.
Nothing that I've seen.
My last tweet is from Cody McClure, CFB. And Cody, you're a man after my own heart. I just picked Arkansas to beat LSU on the air. Good for you, man. You got that one right. I've picked so many upsets that haven't happened. I'm just, let me rally around you. I even picked Mississippi State against Alabama. And the only ones I've gotten right is just because I'm stupid. They're still not good picks.
We haven't been on since the Paris attacks. I thought this kind of just played in for us, even though we're not real sports broadcasters or anything, but we enjoy doing this once a week as a hobby, and the fact that we get to do this, I think we take for granted sometimes. This is from Robert Klimko at Robert Klimko. Sobering day. What an underappreciated luxury it is to argue about dumb sports stuff and pretend it matters. Thought that was pretty fitting for me and BD that we, other stuff's going on in the world that we don't really have a hand on, but we get to sit here and argue about stuff that's important to us, and that's definitely a privilege.
The Paris terrorist attacks, very disconcerting. I'd be less than honest if I didn't say that I had spent a lot of each day since then thinking about just how the world is changing right before our eyes. And it was changing. It's been changing, and that just accelerated it.
Yep.
That's going to wrap it for Tweets of the Week this week. Jay, you ready to spin around the league?
Let's do it.
Let's get the spin on this week's SEC matchups.
Got a couple of games on tap that are fairly interesting. I've got Texas A&M at Vanderbilt. That's 7:30 on the SEC Network. Tennessee at Missouri. Tennessee really needs this win. They have not beaten Missouri since Missouri joined the Southeastern Conference. And they're kind of on a roll. They could have, maybe even should have, beaten Alabama, which we've said is maybe the best team in the nation. Missouri's going to be all charged up, and this is up there in Columbia. Mississippi State's traveling to Arkansas. So Arkansas, will they continue their tear? Or will Prescott and the gang step up and get a win there? And then the LSU at Ole Miss game, and that's at 3:30. That's the CBS game next week. So let me just start with up there in Columbia, Missouri. What do you think is going to happen? Dobbs is a little beat up. Missouri plays great defense. He's got some emotions running.
Yeah, I think Tennessee and company win this game. I think Dobbs gets back on track. I just think Tennessee, Mizzou still is not doing a great job moving the ball. Yes, I know that they beat BYU, and that's actually a big win, especially all things considered for what was going on in Columbia. That game was also in a neutral side. I mean, that was in Kansas City at the Chiefs Stadium. I think Tennessee wins this game. Tennessee's a better football team. Tennessee should finish number two in the East. Mizzou lost to Vandy, right?
Kentucky.
Lost to Kentucky. I mean, these are not good This is not a great Mizzou football team by any means.
Tennessee at Missouri, 7:15. That's on ESPN2. I'll be pulling for Tennessee. I really like this Tennessee team. I like Dobbs.
It's fun.
It just Jalen Hurd. You know, Hurd and Hurd's local guy. So, and you know, there's a lot of friends that are Tennessee fans. So, I think that's the one. If I had to pick one game to watch, that might be the one. Tennessee's just fun to watch for me.
Yeah.
Mississippi State at Arkansas. This game has it's kind of loaded.
My mind says that Arkansas is going to win the game just because they finished the last two seasons. I mean, this is the second season in a row that they're finishing just on a tear and just not the hot team that you don't want to play. I want to see Dak Prescott go out well, and I'd like to see him beat Arkansas, and I'd like to see him beat Ole Miss. I'm going to pick Mississippi State just because that's what I want to see. That's what I want to see happen. I'm not sure that Arkansas's defense, you know, it's one thing to load the box and stop a guy like Leonard Fournette, even though Leonard Fournette is one of the greatest players in the country, one of the greatest SEC, statistically, one of the greatest SEC running back starts of all time, only a sophomore kid's 19 years old. Dak Prescott's a senior, and this guy can do it all. I would say if you were going to rank your running throwing quarterbacks for the last 10 years in the SEC, I mean, I would think that Cam Newton, Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel, I would say that Prescott's got to be mentioned with those guys, and I think that rightfully so. I'd like to say, I think Arkansas is going to have I think they're going to run the ball fine and score. I don't think they're going to have an easy time stopping Prescott, though.
Yeah, Prescott, I agree with you. It would be nice to see him get more recognition than what he would get if he goes down in this game.
Yeah.
I'll say that. This is a tough one to pick. I don't have the line in front of me. I would think Arkansas is favored.
Got to be favored, yeah.
2.5 to, what, 4 or 5?
Golly, somewhere I wouldn't in that neighborhood. Be surprised if it was 6.
Up higher than that?
Yeah.
Mississippi State's one of those teams. I like both of these teams. In fact, I was thinking the other day, so do I have a favorite SEC football team? I've got some teams that I don't enjoy watching quite as much as other teams, but there's not a team that I don't like, so they're kind of all my favorites. But I really learned to appreciate Mississippi State and Arkansas. I've gotten to know a lot of their fans, and people talk about obnoxious fans here or there. Aren't they all? At our conference, isn't everyone just passionate and rabid?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Arkansas's the home team. I think Arkansas is going to win. So here we go. Louisiana State University at Ole Miss. How do you think Ole Miss is going to handle Fournette? And he's had a couple of weeks now where he hasn't been quite the player that he opened up as.
Well, the problem with Ole Miss is has given up a lot of yards to a lot of teams. Even though they were supposed to come in and be this dominating defense, they've given up a lot of yards to a lot of teams and teams with different styles. It's not like one team, one style of team gets them and they shut down another style of team. Alabama is kind of known for struggling against a running quarterback, even though they dominated Prescott. But if you're going to run the ball, they're going to dominate you. Ole Miss, the opposite. They've given up a lot of yards to different style of teams. I think Fournette breaks out this game. My issue is, can LSU shut down Kelly? And that'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think that if Ole Miss can get any sort of running game going and then get Kelly going, that's going to be trouble for Ole Miss. But I have to think that Ole Miss is going to get back on its heels. I think LSU, they've already proven that they're a better team than Florida. I definitely think they're a better team than Memphis. I think it's going to be a great game, but I'm going to go LSU. I think Fournette gets back on track this week. I think also, too, this talk about Les Miles. I mean, he's a player's coach. All this talk about him being out and on the hot seat, you don't think those guys are going to come out ready to play? I think you're going to see a motivated LSU team. I think LSU gets a win. I think it's going to be close. I think LSU gets a win.
Here's what's interesting here. Ole Miss is going to have the Alabama game tape in the same way that Arkansas did.
Yeah.
So on that show, I think I said stopping LSU doesn't take a genius. It's just Alabama happens to have the personnel.
Right.
I wonder after last week if that is a true statement or if Alabama did not scheme in a way that other teams can, and Alabama was just the first team to do it. Instead of having just superior talent, Saban having a week off to prepare for Fournette, they just found a way
right.
to scheme it.
Right.
And so this is going to be interesting that if that's true and they can slow Fournette down, Brandon Harris is serviceable, a good athlete. I don't think he can beat you. I don't think Brandon Harris can beat you. So it might come down to how good the LSU cornerbacks are at jamming the Ole Miss receivers, not letting them get off the line and frustrating Kelly.
Yeah.
That's what it may come down to. You'll pick LSU. This is a pick'em game. I love both of these teams. They're fun to watch. Just fun to watch. Yeah. The Grove, that's one of the places I want to go before a game.
Yep.
I haven't seen a game there.
Oh, man.
If I was going to pick one here, I'd pick Ole Miss. What do you think the over-under is on this game?
Oh, my gosh. I would say the over-under has got to be in the 40s.
I don't have any idea. I didn't look it up before we came. Busy week, so I wasn't able to do the prep that I normally do. But this is liable to be a high-scoring game.
Really? You think it's going to be high-scoring?
It could be. I mean, Ole Miss can put points up.
Yeah, that's true.
And if their defense gives up, if they get gashed, LSU can, Fournette can break them.
Yeah.
And if Fournette's breaking them, then they got to jam the box, and Harris can be good there.
Yeah. On a long
– That's the worst-case scenario. Yeah. So it could be. I mean, when you think about how many points Ole Miss put up against Bama, and Bama gave them chance after chance after chance, but they took advantage of it.
Yep.
So it's going to be fun to watch. That's 3:30 on CBS. The other game here that I wanted to ask you about is Texas A&M at Vanderbilt. With Vandy, they're hosting A&M, and Vanderbilt's got the good defense. They've got two conference wins. They're kind of rallying around Mason.
This might be one of the most, if you were going to just pick a random game to watch, I mean, this is not going to be the game that I watch, but this is probably not a bad game to watch, honestly. With Vanderbilt A&M, Vanderbilt has a lot of momentum. A&M's kind of reeling a little bit.
Yeah. A&M's still better, I think.
I think A&M has an overall more talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball. But, man, Vanderbilt's defense is playing so well. I mean, so well.
And that's just not trying to be nice to Vanderbilt and find something nice to say. They're actually playing good.
They took Florida to the very end. I mean,
Georgia, right?
Yeah. Took Georgia, Florida, beat
and
Kentucky.
Georgia is a pretty good offensive team.
Yeah.
Or has been.
I'm gonna pick A&M just because I think that they've got more talent. But if for some reason Vanderbilt pulled it off, and I know this is kind of a cop-out, I'm not going to be shocked. Like I'm not going to be sitting here next week saying, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe that they, you know, won the game." Vanderbilt has the defense and the strategy to win the game if they wanted to.
Yeah, they get a few turnovers, maybe they flip the field, give themselves a few extra chances, a
couple goal line stands like they had against Kentucky,
which could happen. I mean, Kentucky A&M has just got a better offensive scheme than Kentucky does.
Way more talented.
So I think that's a taller order against A&M, but they've played good against other teams. It's just the SEC West is a different animal than these teams.
The thing that's working against Vanderbilt on the offensive side of the ball is the fact that Chavis knows what he's doing on defense, and he's got more players than Kentucky, a team like Kentucky would have. On the defensive side of the ball to keep just kind of like Florida held Vanderbilt to 7 points. I mean, that's kind of what I expect from Chavis and Texas A&M. Even though A&M is not a dominant D like Florida, great coordinator, they have athletes. Vanderbilt doesn't do a great job moving the ball. I mean, my gosh, Kentucky, they really scored. They had one drive that I actually really drove down the field and scored. Again, just one of those things where I think A&M wins, but again, I think it'd be a good game.
All right, so I've got LSU at Ole Miss. This is week 12. This is it. Week 12, we're coming down the stretch. We'll do this. We've got Thanksgiving, and then rivalry weekend is next weekend,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so we'll record next Tuesday.
Mississippi State at Arkansas, Tennessee at Missouri, Texas A&M at Vandy, some games that we did not spend any time or much time talking about. Charlotte at Kentucky. And that game should have been, I think a lot of Kentucky fans thought that would be the game to be our bowl-eligible game. Charleston Southern at Alabama, we mentioned that one. Idaho at Auburn, one of the stranger matchups of the weekend. Florida Atlantic at Florida, and the Citadel at South Carolina. The Citadel might win that.
They could win that game. Yeah, that would not surprise me.
So in addition to Week 12, you know what else happens this weekend, right?
What's that?
November 20th. Have you circled that day on your calendar for any reason?
Is this the eclipse weekend?
No, dude.
I don't know.
Netflix, Jessica Jones, the next Marvel series releases on the 20th. You don't keep up with that?
No.
And look for Jessica Jones coming out on Netflix. Give it a shot. It's made for the same people as Daredevil. That's not really.
Don't care.
Thanks for being with us.
Drop the gun.